This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Ah, can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Welcome back, folks. We are joined by the Louisiana Insurance Commissioner, Tim Temple. Tim, welcome to the show.
Hey, happy Friday, Newell.
I hope things are going well for you. Happy New Year to you as well, and hope you have a great Mardi Gras. Let's jump right into this. If we could get an update on the Fortified Roof Grant Program, that would be great.
Yeah, no, we, as I think many of your listeners know, we just recently concluded the application process or the enrollment process for the next round. We have we were able to allocate an additional 1,000 grants for this next round, and we will be notifying the people that it's a random selection. I think, as we've talked about before, we went from a first in, you know, first come, first serve to a multi-day enrollment period, and that seems to have been well received. I think it brings more balance to people that have busy, hectic schedules, and we're excited about it. We've got over, I think, right at 2,000 fortified roofs on that have been allocated through the program. That's 2,000 roofs that are currently on. And we have another 1,500 that are going through the process right now of having fortified roofs put on. And no, I just want to remind people, you know, the benefit of this, obviously the first benefit is that you get a reduction on the wind portion of your homeowner's premium. And several carriers out there have significant multi-digit discounts. You also have the peace of mind knowing that when the wind blows next, that your shingles are going to stay on, your contents are going to stay dry, and also there's the added value. It brings additional value to the property, to the home. Alabama has many tens of thousands of roofs, and their numbers show that a home is worth about 7% more being sold than a non-fortified roof. So there's a lot of value associated with this program.
Absolutely. Are you contemplating anything relative to your legislative agenda this year that directly addresses increasing the amount of dollars available for the fortified roof program?
There is. Newell, we got a couple of things we're going to do. One, and this isn't for the program. This is actually for your listeners out there that choose to put a fortified roof on themselves, that they're either building a new home or they're replacing a roof themselves, and they choose to not go through the grant program and pay for it themselves. Right now, you can get a $5,000 tax deduction. We're going to have some legislation that increases that to $10,000. Because I think it should be at least equal to what we're willing to give people through the grant program. But I think more importantly, we're going to bring legislation to change the funding mechanism of this. Currently, I have to go to the legislature each year during the budgetary process and ask for money from the legislature, ask them to allocate funds from the state general fund. what we're going to propose is that we a two-tiered system. One, we're going to increase some of the fees that the insurance industry, that the insurance companies, that insurance agents, that licensed adjusters, people in the industry have to pay. We're going to ask for a slight bump in that. And then we're also going to ask for a dedication of the funds that, that you and I as homeowners, when we pay our homeowners premium, there's a premium tax associated with it. And I'm going to ask the legislature to allocate a very small portion of that to the fortified roof program so that every year we know with pretty close certainty exactly how much money we have for the program and not have to kind of wait. You know, in good years, you get money. In bad years, you don't through the legislature. I would rather have a dedicated funding source. And so we hope to have both of those bills this session so that every year going forward, the people of Louisiana know exactly how much we have to allocate through the program.
Do you believe there would be any appetite to really change the building codes to mandate more of this and to have a funding formula in place? So, for example, we could probably determine what the actual percentage of cost of a house that's being built new is associated with a roof, right, for a standard roof. And then take that delta, the difference between a fortified roof and that roof, and offer some kind of tax deduction combination grant program to kind of make up the difference. Because I think you said once before that, you know, we're really community rating these homeowner policies. It's not really an experience rated policy like automobiles. And the more fortified roofs we can get, the better off everybody is, right?
That's correct. And Newell, we have had conversations last year and into this year with the Building Code Council and with the License and Contractors Board or Contractors and Licensing Board, specifically to that point, to look and see where it makes sense to have fortified as kind of the starting point. And look, Alabama has done this extremely successful.
Well, there's no doubt it would be southeast, southwest Louisiana, right? Any place south
right.
of the
I-10. Well, and that's why, you know, right now Louisiana has a statewide uniform building code. And right. so that's why we're going to have to look and modify it because, again, to your point, it doesn't make sense to build a fortified roof in, you know, Monroe, Louisiana. It does in coastal Louisiana. So we're going to have to work with these organizations to create a framework to make it so that the fortified would be applicable to the appropriate area. And to your point, though, like right, if that became the norm and you put a fortified roof on, as I mentioned, there's already a tax deduction out there that you could apply for. So there is right. a way to recover the additional expense associated with a fortified roof.
Yeah, I mean, it would just seem to me you make a bigger splash, you know, and obviously the insurers, they would take notice. It's going to be interesting to see, and I guess we have kind of a science experiment going on right now as it relates to California. So they're going to go at this from zero sum, right? There's nothing there. And it's going to be interesting to see what they do relative to their building code to keep the cost down for insurance because everyone left.
Those conversations right now. I was just at a conference yesterday with several hundred insurance and reinsurance executives, and mitigation is being talked about, not just for California. I mean, but specific to California, you know, they're talking about they call them vegetation setbacks, right? So so that the fire can't get too close to your home. Building materials that are more fire resistant, and that makes sense over there in the wildfire areas. Where we are, you know, we do flood mitigation. We elevate homes. We build up the foundation. If your home's not on not elevated 12 feet in the air. We already have that mindset here, but we need to expand it. And look, the insurance industry is looking at it, and there's collectively, it's like if you don't mitigate against future perils that you know are going to happen or could happen, it's going to be more expensive. But we're having this conversation now on a national basis.
Yeah. It's good. I think, and you correct me if I'm wrong, let me ask the question this way. I believe that there's going to be some impact across this country as a result of what's happened in California. Agree or disagree?
Well, look, that's insurance, so it's complex, and that's a multi-tiered answer, and let me try and answer it a little bit if I can. I think on your national carriers, there's the potential to see some increased potential. I wouldn't say that's guaranteed or certain at this time. Your regional carriers, I don't think you're going to see an impact from those. And again, yesterday I was at an event and there was a global reinsurer on a panel, and they were asked that question, and their answer was no, because the money that they allocate for wind risk is separate from the money that's allocated to that fire risk. So they had different pots of money. And those different pots of money cost, there's different expense for each of those. And so that one particular reinsurer, which is one of the largest in the world, said it's not going to impact their wind pricing. So,
well, that's good.
Again, it's a little bit of a complex answer, but I would tell people that's not something to worry about. You know, we need to be focused on what we can do and control in Louisiana.
What other things are you considering for your legislative agenda this year?
Yeah, we're going to continue to we're going to look at some additional property reform. I'm monitoring what's going on right now in Texas, Arkansas, Mississippi, Alabama, and Florida. All five of those states, their legislatures are in. And are about to go in. Florida's about to go in, and they're going to be bringing additional insurance reform, whether it's property, whether it's auto, workers' compensation, and so I'm going to be looking to make sure that Louisiana is doing everything that we need to catch up or keep up with those states with regards to reform. So there will be some property reform, but I think. Just as important as we're going to continue to bring auto legal reform, some bills there to address, the highest premiums in the country when it comes to auto, whether it's your personal auto or commercial auto.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see that. I just got this interesting text, goes along with what you were saying, Tim. I live in Mobile, Alabama. Once I received my gold fortified certificate, my insurance dropped 35%. It's a big number.
Yeah, that's a huge number, and I think I'm glad you mentioned that, Newell, because that's the next evolution of the Louisiana, going back on the fortified roof program, of our program. Right now, we have a fortified roof program. The Alabama Gold program, it's a roof, it's windows, it's doors. It's all of those, and that's the next evolution of our program is to create a tiered system. If you only want a fortified roof, that's fine. If you want a larger discount, then you need to do the fortified windows and fortified doors. And there's information out there. I don't want to confuse your listeners right now at this point, because we don't have that in our grant program. You can certainly build to those standards. But, we need to, and that's a good example. Alabama, they've built their program over years. Louisiana, we're going to do the same thing.
A caller called in and asked, under the fortified roof program, they were denied because they had a porch that was not closed in that had a metal roof. Are there provisions to, eliminate that and still get fortified roof rating, and maybe negotiate with the insurance company as it relates to that roof in a different small portion of roof in a different fashion?
Yeah, you know, I've not heard of that being an issue, but, you know, I would encourage it, and I'm glad you've mentioned that because I just wrote it down, and I'm going to put this to the team and ask, you know, what is the justification for that? You know, the program is certified under the IB HS, International Building Home Safety Program. And so they're the ones that came up with this fortified certificate over a decade ago. And they did a lot of testing. They did a lot of modeling to see what, you know, the types of structures that could be fortified versus those that can't. So I'm sure there's some reason they think that should be excluded, but it's one that I'm certainly going to take a look at and see and at least understand and get some justification why that would be excluded.
So these townhome type, we got another caller calling in, townhome developments, you know, you have a common wall and, you know, they present themselves a little differently in materials and stuff like that. The caller said that they went through the whole process, and at the last stop, they were declined because of materials used by their next door neighbor that they share a firewall with. I guess those tend to be a lot more difficult situations than otherwise, right?
Well, it certainly sounds like that. And look, I know everybody would like to get, become a grantee under this program. And look, not every home and every property is going to qualify for that. But
IBHS, I'm not sure they went through the grant program. I think they were just trying to get a fortified designation, right?
I don't know. I don't know if they went, if they were, well, it sounds like it was an existing home, so they were trying to get, you know, it sounds like the process worked as far as the inspector coming out to see if they could qualify or not. Now, I think that you can still put a fortified roof on, and that's one where, you know, I always encourage if any of your listeners, if they're thinking about a fortified, call your insurance agent, have them contact your insurance company or the other insurance companies that they represent and find out, you know, what fortified discounts they have. And then if it sounds like something you're interested in pursuing, you know, obviously then work through your agent with the insurance company, get an inspector out and see if your home could be fortified.
Let's pivot to kind of the state of the state as it relates to homeowners. Are you seeing a trend where more homeowner insurance companies are writing in Southeast Louisiana?
We're seeing that, but I think the thing that, you know, I want people to understand, and we're trying to, I'm trying internally here with my coworkers, and we're going through this to figure out how do we present this information. But we're seeing the number of rate increases has come down. Just the number of companies that have filed over the last three-year period, so 23, 24, and into 25, the number of companies requesting a rate increase has come down. The average increase is coming down, and we've had several companies that have actually filed rate decreases. So we are trending in the right area, in the right direction. And as soon as I can get to, and I say as soon, meaning we're working on that, putting out a release to show the citizens of Louisiana that the property reform that we asked the governor and the legislature to support last year, and they did, is working. It's doing what we said it would do, which is to help make Louisiana a more competitive state so that companies can, you know, competition is going to lower rates. And it is working. So I would say stay tuned to see some information that's going to demonstrate that it is working.
Tim Temple, Insurance Commissioner for the State of Louisiana, thank you so much for joining us. Always appreciate your time. We know you're busy and your insight, and look forward to the next time we get to talk about this very important topic that's top of mind for a lot of folks. And have a great Mardi Gras.
I appreciate it. Stay safe. Thank you.
You too, sir. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. We will be right back, folks.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
The details behind the Diddy indictment. Taylor Swift's stalkers. Jerry Lee trying to kill Elvis. Disgraceland dives into the dark side of entertainment every Tuesday. Follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. We're joined by Joe Geruso, New Orleans City Council Member, District A, to talk about West End Lakeview community meetings relative to the redevelopment of West End. Joe, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Noel.
So what kind of stimulated this to begin with, Joe?
Well, as I've told everybody, I feel like I have a 7-year-old who's still in nursery school because I started working on this as soon as I got elected. I've been working on it with Representative Hilferty and the old District 5 council member in Jefferson Parish, now at large, council member Van Franken, and then also now council member Liljenberg, who's been a great partner too, to move this forward. And the idea, Newell, was really kind of what we saw as an outgrowth of the Super Bowl. Number one, this has been an area that has been in commerce for as long as I can remember, and certainly for all of us who went out there and have nostalgia as a place to go to and to have a wonderful lakefront venue. And it's sad that my kids don't even know what was there before. And look, candidly, I always like the idea of regionalism and economic development. And it's hard because you're working with the state and another parish in Orleans, which has its own bureaucracies. But I don't ever want that to get in the way of what Michael Hecht always says about not being able to have nice things. And it just felt like this is the right time to push a project like this forward.
You know, I had fond memories of being a young kid out there with my parents, dining as a teenager out there, as a young adult out there, all different age groups for a long, long time, and ain't there no more, right?
Yeah, well, that's exactly right. Look, I've said all the time, I grew up, we were a Fitzgerald's family, and I know a lot of people went to Brunings or Swanson's or Jaeger's or all these different restaurants or even Bart's on the Lake. I was too young for that. But I know about all these places that were there. And look, the thing that I think we tried to break through a little bit more on Wednesday in New Orleans than we did in Jefferson Parish is, if you want to have protection of green space that's abutting this area and you want to make sure the municipal yacht harbor is trying to preserve that space and keep up the facilities and everything else, the pelicans are not paying property taxes and the trees aren't paying any sales tax. So right. If you want to make sure that this area comes back, you want a revenue source so you can have commercial responsibly done side by side with this green space and make sure that you now are injecting excitement, revenue, family and community into a place that everybody enjoyed for such a long time.
Chief concerns of the community are?
Chief concerns are the usual. Every time you have land use, you can pretty much assume you have the holy trinity of parking, noise, traffic. And those concerns manifested themselves always through all the meetings. And look, there's music out near the lake right now. People want to know how that's going to work. And we're going to have to work on some of the infrastructure that's out there. Lake Marina needs to be redone from lakeshore all the way to roadway. The infrastructure there, Newell's been neglected since Katrina. So the developer and the city is going to have to do some of those things. There's always concerns about not knowing. And I think as we go through this process, that will be first a request for qualifications, followed by a request for proposals, really not only taking in public input, but having schematics and showing people what it looks like, whatever that might be, whether it's entertainment or recreation or restaurants, is going to be really important so people can start seeing it and touching it before anything gets there. But and look, there are some people who are environmentally concerned too. I don't want to whitewash or minimize those folks as well. But the usual litany of things are the ones that we heard, and I think that's always going to be something you have to address, particularly anytime you do something commercially related.
Absolutely. Hopefully we're able to move this on. Let us pivot, if you don't mind, Joe, for just a second. You had a budget meeting this week in response to overtures made by the Cantrell administration. I guess there's no other way to say it. City was broke. And I guess you were looking for the receipts of same. What did you find?
Nothing so far. And I don't think they like what I had to say yesterday, which was I considered this to be contrived from the beginning. And if you can't explain it, then that means to me you don't have the evidence and you're trying to reverse engineer where you are. And what was also interesting, Newell, was a lot of times, as you know, in a legislative body, you kind of have one council member or legislator who may really be pushing on an issue. Yesterday, all the committee members were really actively engaging on this, whether it was Councilmember Morrell asking for the receipts, as you said, Councilmember Green saying, I don't understand. We just passed a budget on November 21st, and everybody said it was fine. And how do we get to January 30th with all of a sudden we're on a fiscal cliff? And I think Councilmember Thomas pushed on, really, there needs to be more sight lines into communication and not having breakdowns, particularly between the administration to the council. So I stand by what I've said in the past, which is we obviously want to see where they are. If there's things that need to be done, we want to address those and be responsible. But we're not going to just listen to empty bromides and say that's acceptable. One more piece to that too, Newell. The council will not be passing any ordinances related to the city's general fund until this is sorted out. Because if you're telling me that we're in a fiscal cliff and that the sky is falling, well, then you know, people aren't going to get things out of the general fund until that's sorted out and explained publicly. And I don't know, I'm not doing that to be punitive. I certainly don't want to punish city employees. That's the last thing we want to do. But I don't know how I can be responsible and consistent and say, well, there is this looming financial crisis, and at the same time, we're going to spend money recklessly.
Is there anything that keeps you up at night with about, I don't know, 9 months left, maybe 10 months left of this administration? I mean, I think folks are going to start checking out. I mean, I think we're taking a very cavalier attitude. I, like you, believe that this whole thing was contrived. I don't know what's worse, if we don't have the money or it's contrived. My gut tells me if it's contrived, that's really bad, because now we're just lying to one another, right? I mean,
And
I just see this as a very dangerous inflection point in this last months of this administration.
What I tell people about that, and you were an elected official, I always understand there's puffing going on. People may overstate their position or not give me all the information I need. Fine. There's a difference between that and lying about something or so materially misstating facts that it becomes a problem. And I think that's why you've seen the council take such a hard-nosed approach in two separate meetings, because we expect to be given really good information and we want the public to be engaged. I think if you're saying what keeps me up at night, it's not so much people checking out, but it's the burden that the council is under to A, try and keep everything in motion, and then B, not overextend ourselves into the executive branch, because we're not the executive branch. And so we want government to run well. We want things to be easy for people. I think if you really want to make me angry, either lie to me or make things hard for a resident unnecessarily, those are probably the two best ways to make me blow my top. And I think as we focus on the last 325 days, it needs to be a very resident-focused philosophy at the end.
In my monologue today, I talked about these trials and tribulations that we're having in the city permit, safety and permits. And the response by the director in her answering of questions from the media, it's almost as if she just arrived there. She's been there since 2022. And we're not any better off now than we were then. And I just, it just seems crazy to me that there's been little to no progress, 6 months behind. It's interesting. I mean, if, you know, we're struggling and everybody's trying to get momentum. We did a great job at execution for preparation of the Super Bowl, but that's not going to bring us to the promised land. I mean, we want to be a second-tier city. We're a third-tier city, and we're not going to get there unless we get these things straightened up. I mean, where do you go now? I mean, it's just, I mean, when one of your own people in that agency says, I wouldn't go through this process, I'm getting ready to build a house, and I guess he said it jokingly, hopefully. He's like, I'm thinking about not even getting a permit. I mean, that's a sad commentary.
It is a sad commentary, and that's not what you want. Let me maybe even take one step back. My philosophy, and I think you share this, we've talked about it before, is safety and permits should be unlike any other part of the city of New Orleans. And by that, I mean NOPD, fire, EMS, Department of Public Works, whatever else, almost all of those are cost centers to the city. I am not looking for them to be making money for the city. By contrast, safety and permits to me has two primary goals. Number one, it is the efficiency and the public safety factor, which of course are very important. We don't want those things going too fast, and we want them done well. But at the same time, they're a profit center for the city. They should be making money for the city, and it should be a very consistent process that's there. The hard part, Newell, I worry about with them is they've been under federal investigations. You now have somebody there from the OIG, and you and I have had, again, this conversation many times. In government, the easiest thing to say is no. And so how do you switch the mentality from I'm just trying to do my job and I'm not going to get in trouble for pushing something forward, holding something back, making sure something sticks to the right timeline, implementing consistency? And those are the things that need to happen. The last thing I'll also say is the city spent money on a outside consultant to come in and talk about streamlining the operations of code enforcement and safety and permits. And there was a small group of people who were pushing to see where those things stand. And at this moment, I don't have the answer to that. And so, again, if we're going to spend for consultancy services to provide us better lines of sight into what we need to do, fantastic. But then we need to talk about what we're doing to implement those to make it reality.
You know, I can't help but ask and wonder, you know, if a task force mentality kind of similar to what GNO Inc. has done with Joe Threat from the Department of Public Works and bringing about this collaborative effort is something that's necessary here, because safety and permits has such a positive and strong connection to progressive economic development And, you know, people are making decisions based on what other people's experience have been through safety and permits. I got a ton of texts that came in and said, we don't build in the city anymore for that very reason.
I know.
That's a dangerous place to be in. I mean, you can't increase your tax base. You can't increase your population. Your out migration exceeds your in migration. You can't turn those things around when you got this cog wheel.
Well, look, you know, that's part of the reason we passed our Net 30 ordinance. And so for people who aren't budget wonks, that was to, so the city wasn't keeping its vendors afloat, and that if there's an ordinance, an invoice that was more than 30 days, the city has to pay timely. And again, that was an impediment to doing business. And from what we're told, the vendors are slowly starting to come back to the city mm-hmm. to do business again. And I think the same thing is true with safety and permits. People will come back. The marketplaces go where the capital and the money are. New Orleans is going to have things building. There's going to be opportunity here. You're definitely seeing economic growth in the downtown areas and other parts of the city. But you got to make it available for both residents and businesses to be able to do that permitting much more easily, much more predictably, and with greater consistency.
I mean, we don't have to recreate the wheel, right? There are a lot of people that are doing it better. Maybe not great, but better.
You know? Well, look, so, we again, in budget committee yesterday, I think one of the colleagues said, well, how is Jefferson Parish doing this? And I find myself asking that question a lot where I hear we're at a bureaucratic roadblock. Well, how is Jefferson Parish? What is St. Charles Parish? What is St. Bernard? What is St. Tammany? I mean, it seems to me, to your point, you don't have to start from scratch here. You just got to make sure that you have these right things in place and watch how other people are doing it. And listen, I know it's called a best practice, but let's be honest, that's a euphemism sometimes for plagiarizing other people's work. And if you can go kind of get their template for doing it, then go do it.
Absolutely. And I don't think any of these people suffer from a pride of authorship. They're willing to share. So, you know.
Oh, yeah. Joe, look, every time we talk to those other parishes, they are.
As always, we know you're busy. Thank you so much for joining us. Always appreciate your time, your insight. Have a great Mardi Gras. I'm sure I'll see you out there.
Same to you, Neil. Take care.
All right. That's Joe Geruso, New Orleans City Council member, District A. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. You know, every time we have a certain type or a tragic shooting event, everyone starts talking about how the instrumentality, whether it's the gun or otherwise, is the cause. And I oftentimes remind folks that if folks have evil in their heart, that when there's a will, there's a way. And it's really not about the instrumentality. And many times I talk about knives and the incidents in Europe and other folks that have really strict gun ownership laws, that they have other problems. And there's always pushback from folks on this front. And so every time I come across an interesting article, like I did in Agency France Presse, that was reported that French police will start random searches for knives and other weapons concealed in bags at and around schools in bid to fight an increase in violent attacks. The education minister announced this Friday, and the spot searches will begin in the spring. This new policy has been prompted by stabbings becoming much more common, much more prevalent, said Minister Elizabeth Bourne. And I mean, this is emblematic of what I'm talking about. When you have access to one instrumentality that's more severe than or more difficult than other instrumentalities, what do you see? You see a rise in knife attacks, and that's what you're seeing there. And if the same attitude goes after knives, it's going to be something else. And then we get all into, well, you can create more carnage with a gun than a knife. And then I start giving the examples of knifing attacks where they actually killed 10, 12, 13 people. And then there's another excuse. And that's why we're never going to really get to resolve this, because we're not focused on the individual. We're focused on the instrumentality. Well, there's far too many instrumentalities that can be utilized in order to kill someone. And we're not going to get anywhere until we gain a better understanding of the motivation of individuals, whether it be mental health, drug use, this, that, or otherwise, lack of the tools necessary for conflict resolution. We're just never going to move forward because we're engaged in deflecting and denying and evading and then attacking one another on a thought process. Just something to think about. We'll be right back. Folks, when we come back after the top of the hour news break, we'll visit with Ryan Bourne from Cato. He authored a piece, Memo to Doge, Smarter Tech Alone Won't Deliver Efficiency. We'll visit with Arthur Hardy and with the state fire marshals. So stay with us.